This is Fight Back with Bob Fitrakis and Connie Goodell Newton on WCRS 98.3, 102.1.
Indeed, 102.1 and 98.3. This is Bob Fitrakis here with Connie Goodell Newton.
Yep, two for the price of one.
So, a lot of things happening, and one of them of importance is, looks like your favorite sugar daddy, Larry Flynn's coming back to town.
Oh, really?
I would push him around in a wheelchair if he made a small donation to the Free Press.
That's kind of a fetishy thing.
But looks like he's bringing a sex club to Clintonville, and Larry Flynn actually started out in Ohio, really in Kentucky. What is now known as Hustler Magazine, which, for full disclosure, Harvey Wasserman and I have written at least three cover stories for Hustler. Larry Flynn likes our work, and
yeah, I read it for the articles.
So but he started out in Northern Kentucky, crossed over into Cincinnati, really was driven out of Cincinnati by the moralist, and when Flint left Cincinnati, he came to Columbus, Ohio, and was right up there on Broad Street.
What did he do in Columbus, and when? How long ago was this?
I don't know everything he did, but he moved Hustler magazine here.
Okay.
Before he moved out to California, he moved Hustler to Columbus, Ohio, had a mansion, the Hustler Mansion, right across from the Columbus School for Girls. That was not well received.
Oh, I bet it wasn't.
And downtown, he had a little office, and people who went there, my old colleague Earl Schaefer, now deceased, a sociologist, went down there as a good sociologist would, and the receptionist, there was a picture over her desk where she had posed, Hustler style.
So yeah.
He said it was a little awkward, but the interesting thing is going into Clintonville, where the old Sun Bubble used to be, also in Clintonville.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with the Sun Bubble?
Well, I remember the commercials, but I mean,
fun for the whole family.
Right. I mean, wasn't it like a hot tub place where you could go and they had like hot tubs shaped like champagne glasses or something? Am I imagining that? I don't really
know. No, that's
know
like
if
the Poconos, but you're right. But it was a hot tub place.
Yeah, a hot tub place.
And it did come with a area case you got tired to lay down in, and an air mattress.
Oh.
And you could rent it by the hour.
Oh, geez.
So it was thought to be, well, they portrayed themselves as
a family place.
Family place. Yeah. The reality is, if you went there and staked it out, wasn't a whole lot of families going in.
Right. I mean, I would think that it's probably people going there to have sex.
Probably right.
Okay.
Much like that strip in Whitehall where they rent the motel rooms by the hour. So I welcome Larry Flynn back to Clintonville.
Great.
Larry Flint is coming back to Columbus, to Clintonville, and maybe, who knows, we can go there and pitch some stories.
So is he coming here to live, or he's just
he's just open. Here's the upside. It's going to be a coffee bar and sex emporium.
Ah, well, so like vibrators?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. So two things I like, coffee. Right.
Deluxe Lolita dolls.
I love coffee.
Right, deluxe Lolita dolls with three penetrable orifices.
What?
And coffee. I think orifices is okay.
Well, yeah, we can say orifices. Right.
So yeah, you can go there. It's like coffee bar. And actually, if you've been reading the New York Times lately, a lot of the mainstream drug stores, are selling, you know, what used to be considered sexual vibrator items right on the shelf.
Okay.
There just isn't the stigma.
Well, they're health aids.
And
right?
You know the history of the history of the vibrator.
Back when women were confined to their beds and bed rest, and they were diagnosed with hysteria,
that's right.
They would be prescribed manual stimulation. Sometimes a doctor would manually stimulate them. And sometimes they would give them devices so that they could do it, or sometimes a doctor would use it. And so basically the doctors were masturbating women as a way to treat them for hysteria. Is that about right, Bob?
Correct. Quite. Hysteria, the wandering womb.
Wow.
They weren't thinking. They were getting, you know, all upset, and they weren't thinking about home and hearth and children.
Right.
And literally, back in the 1880s, the Victorian age, in the 1890s, if you look at some of the old Sears catalogs, you'll see these old vibrators.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of them will say, sold only to doctors.
Yeah. And then I think after that, like probably in like the 50s or something, they had personal massagers, right? The magic wand, big massagers or whatever,
that comes out of World War II victory culture.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, so, I mean, coming out of the hysteria era, I guess I'm the beneficiary of two things. Vibrators, a good thing, and a bad thing is, you know, women getting called crazy or mentally ill, you know, because of their femininity, basically, or because of their gender. So that's something that I think still happens a lot, is that, you know, if you talk to any guy who just broke up with his girlfriend, chances are his girlfriend's crazy, right? I have a hard time believing that that percentage of women in the population are actually crazy as their like exes think they are. So,
and what many feminist writers and others have said, often if a woman acts at all like a man, she's considered crazy.
Yeah.
It's, you know, that whole rigid gender identification.
Yeah.
Which is defined by society more than by reality.
Being in a male-dominated profession, I have to say, I feel very empowered by, you know, my masculine behavior. And I think that's really because, like, what we define as masculinity is, like, agency. Just the ability to do things for yourself, you know. That the power that comes just from doing something and being a subject and having subjecthood instead of object, being an object, like a sexual object. And so it really, I mean, my profession has been very empowering to me, to be a lawyer or to, you know, when I was studying philosophy, which is a male dominated field. And I think it's, you know, it's a shame that femininity has been defined as passive and as objectified. On the other hand, I mean, just talking about pornography, I think that, like, it's something that men and women can enjoy. There's been like, a lot of lesbian porn that is, like, very pro-female agency on our backs. You know, the idea that a woman can be sexual and be an agent and, you know, be, like, I guess, the master of her own pleasure. So, I mean, I don't think pornography is all bad. I think that, you know, when there, it is problematic when, you know, there's a genre that portrays women as rape victims or murder victims or victims of, being cut up into pieces or torture or something like that. On the other hand, it's also good to realize that, like, what we fantasize about is not even necessarily, like, what we actually desire. So, I don't know. I think, you know, that's just on the topic of Larry Flint and pornography in general. As a feminist, I think I have a pretty mixed, I guess, like, a mixed view on it. I think it could be positive or negative, depending on how you take it.
Well, many feminist writers, and there's been a long-going debate since really the 70s, and even before that, is pornography and erotica the same thing?
Mm.
Often they'll argue that erotica is based on not being an object, but an active subject, and it's mutually pleasurable to the people involved, versus pornography, which they'll say is really the objectification or fetish of some body part. But again, I'm with Woody Allen on this, who argues that The real people with penis envy appear to be men. They're the ones that are obsessed with penis size.
Yeah.
Women, you know, are a lot more flexible in most studies. But again, and I remember there was a sociologist a while back, and there was a big question of ethics, is, you know, do men peek at each other in public restrooms?
Is that really like a subject for debate? I mean, I'm thinking, of course they do, right? I'm a woman and I know that. Of course they look. I mean, discreetly, so people don't think they're gay in a heteronormative society, but yes, they look.
If it's anything over 1 second, it means you may have eclectic sexual proclivities. Like...
Eclectic, yeah.
Eclectic. All right. So Larry Flint coming back to Columbus, Ohio. Well, not him personally,
yeah,
but his store in Clintonville, which is interesting,
yeah,
since that's one of the leading zip codes now, Clintonville, for lesbians in America.
Yeah.
It's kind of a haven up there.
Great.
For...
Well, I hope he has a lot of like sex-positive material there that is empowering to women.
And Connie also hopes he has really good house coffee.
Yes, I'm definitely going for the coffee.
All right. Speaking of from object to subject, hopefully they'll be bringing back public access. It appears to be back in the public policy debate.
Public access television.
Public
yeah,
access
sounds
television.
Good.
They're on 21 because Connie and I or others could do a show.
It'll be a Channel 21? Yeah,
because Connie has
public
never
TV?
Gotten the chance to tap dance, and she's highly skilled in that area.
Oh, well, actually, I can
roller skating.
Well, let's see,
biking,
yes. I can do other. I can play guitar.
She does play guitar.
I play guitar sometimes. I played Band in a Hat, did a little, a brief punk rock stint. I could probably try out for Dancing with the Stars or something. Like, I can do some ballroom dancing, which, you know, not that I would really want to be videotaped dancing, but. I don't know.
Would, but part of it is you would be giving a political rap as you danced.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
I'll think about that.
Public access, right? Across the spectrum for 10 years, I did a show produced by Suzanne Patzer, who I'm now married to, and from the Democratic left, I still get people coming up to me and saying,
hey,
didn't you used to have that
show?
Well,
that's great.
You played the part of a loud guy shouting a lot at rallies.
Yeah, I played the part. Well, yeah, and that's interesting from a, you know, a subject object while we're on the topic is, you know, a lot of times people sit around watching TV and they're really passive spectators. With public access TV, you know, people in Columbus will have the chance to participate in, you know, making television. And you know, as much as I kind of like love to say that I hate television, I hate the TV, I'm really enjoying being on the radio and producing and making media that way. And I might even enjoy being on television if I had the chance, or, you know, making documentaries. A lot of my friends make documentaries, and that's pretty awesome as well. I think the internet has really changed a lot of that subject-object relationship that we have with television. Mm-hmm. You know, we've moved from being passive spectators of television to, you know, having a more interactive experience with YouTube and, you know, finding the news online, you know, search engines, and actually being able to interact with the box, with the internet and the computer, which a lot of times brings us movies and TV shows. So, you know, TV is still around, but it's a lot less influential than the internet is right now. And especially with things like YouTube and the ability to watch videos and things online. But we had public access in the 90s, and I think it would be great to bring that back and have that as part of our community, because it really, I think, gives people a voice and a local voice. You know, it allows people locally to make the news and to make media.
Free the media, be the media.
Yeah.
That's why we need public access. And really, it's in many ways, Connie, it's really about narrative, because we're so reliant on... corporate for-profit narratives of what people are thinking, often brought to us as we lay there or sit there passively. TV is a very passive medium. Out of all the mass media, it's probably in many ways the most passive. And why can't we tell our own stories? That's what public access should be about. Is that one of the things about this radio station, you'll find, which plays Al Jazeera, is the narrative from an Arab station is different from the narrative of, you know, NBC4, which is owned by Comcast and General Electric, or Walt Disney, which owns ABC News or Fox News Corp.
This is Fight Back with Bob Fitrakis and Connie Goodell Newton on WCRS 98.3, 102.1.
And let me just give you one example of a different narrative. They had this Woodfest up on campus.
Woodfest?
Woodfest, and it got out of control. And you may have
another
seen
one of those.
The students, you know, there was rioting. Three were arrested.
Was that
students
in the,
on felony charges?
Like 2000 or something?
No, it just occurred.
Oh, really?
Over
that one, yeah. Well, I remember when I was in college in like 2000, there were riots all the time. But go ahead. there was a new riot.
Right, there was. Okay. And they called it the Woodfest. And the police showed up and there was macing. And three guys were arrested on felony charges. But what I noticed...
Wow, felony like rioting?
Or something assaulting else? Police officers.
Oh, yeah.
But what I noticed,
you
know, the allegations were, you know, they threw beer bottles or something at the police. But what I noticed, two out of the three in their mugshots on TV being arraigned sure looked like someone beat the hell out of them. As an attorney, I'm thinking excessive use of force. Why isn't somebody asking these guys, did the police beat you?
Yeah, what happened?
Because we know in the case of of a friend of ours who who's in jail right now is that
serving hard time.
Not a violent man, a very you know, passive man in many ways, but paranoid of the police and had an encounter with a police, you know, where a police officer was assaulted, but probably not hurt that bad. And our friend ended up, you know, not only in prison, but beaten nearly to death.
He had a lot
his,
of
lungs broken.
Yeah, he had a lot. He got ribs, broken ribs, a lung
and
punctured,
that,
I think.
Yeah, the lung was punctured.
You know, bruises, black eye, really bad injuries. And he was the one who was charged with a crime and sent to jail. So
from a policy perspective, I'm wondering, what did the police do when they showed up? In the 1990s, we had Cop Watch because... I think if police just show up in college students at springtime, they're partying, and you show up and begin to mace people, and it's at an event where alcohol is served, there may be encounters that don't need to happen.
Yeah.
And there may be better ways, different types of policing that can occur.
I mean, honestly, like, I live around campus, and... A lot of times if you just ask people to be quiet and settle down a little bit, they will. I mean, I don't know what kind of situation that was, but really, I mean, I you know, live in a rough part of Columbus near campus, and generally, if you talk to your neighbors, get to know your neighbors, ask them civilly to, you know... to kind of settle down or whatever. A lot of times they do that. And I think sometimes police can aggravate situations by just coming in and macing. And, you know, maybe things are a little bit different for me because I'm female and I maybe have a better ability to kind of keep my cool or something in situations like that and just ask people nicely to handle themselves in a mature way. But yeah, I mean, I think that you have to be really careful if you're going into a situation and being really aggressive and aggravating the situation. And it seems like a possibility that that happened here. So, I mean, I just wonder, you know, are these kids who have felony charges and maybe got beat up, are they, you know, do you think they'll like get off a little easier because they were college kids and just drinking or whatever? I mean, it seems like... What I've noticed from riots is that it seems like they treat college students who are rioting over football a lot differently than they do political activists who have rioting charges.
Yeah, in this case, we'll see what happens. Hopefully, you know, I believe in lawyers and I believe in our system of due process. I hope they get lawyered up.
Yeah.
And I hope that in the future we can figure out different ways to police the college community. Really, it's a student ghetto in many ways. But usually when I've been at events as an activist, two types of cops I really like to show up.
Mm-hmm.
One, middle-aged cops with a large beer gut near retirement because they've been around. They've seen stuff. They'll come up. They'll talk to you. They'll tell you the ground roots. And women police officers who will often engage you as an individual and try to win your trust, who I always fear, and I know there's going to be trouble, if you know a bunch of young cops show up, 20s, early 30s, in riot equipment.
Generally,
you put a cop in riot equipment, and there's going to be a riot.
They're coming for a fight, and you know they're armed. You know, and that I think can really aggravate the situation. If you bring anybody into a situation who's armed, you know, people have that fear and become defensive when they see somebody who's armed and in riot gear, you know? So I think a lot of it is kind of like, you know, like the dark forces, the dark side. It's like, don't go over to the dark side, and fear is an enemy that will cause violence. So I definitely believe that. Star Wars stuff.
And again, the police are here to protect and serve, and there should be community policing. Hopefully this will get straightened out in the campus area. Now note, when students were rioting and chanting USA, USA, and jumping half-naked into Mirror Lake, celebrating the murder of Osama bin Laden, no one intervened. That was on the college campus, you know, but what would have happened if they would have come out there and maced people? There would have been trouble. So the difference between the college police and the Columbus police is often
I guess the college
startling.
Police, they let kids play a little bit more.
No, exactly.
I mean, you have to let people play and kind of be independent and do what they want. And not just like in college situations, but, you know, people. Like, be people. I mean, I always think like, you know, I always kind of wonder, like, when people talk about gangs, is it like, are these high school boys who've known each other and grown up in the same neighborhood and they're hanging out in a group of, like, 10 boys because they went to high school together? Or are they a gang? Are they a criminal gang that's, like, up to no good and you know, doing criminal things or whatever? And I think, really, a lot of that is a matter of perspective. Like, any one of them might be, you know, like a bad seed or something, but that doesn't mean it's a gang. I don't know. I guess there probably are actual gangs. I mean,
sure, and many of them have competing identities. They may be a gang member on Saturday night, and Sunday they may be in the church choir.
Yeah, definitely.
It all depends on the circumstances. And often the best way to deal with gangs is actually bring some jobs, bring a sense of community into a neighborhood, empower people, and often allow them to make a living. And, and you don't end up with gangs when you actually have alternatives. Look, people will turn, will make money.
Right? Yeah.
I mean, people will engage in entrepreneurship. And if there's a demand for things that are illegal, be it certain drugs, be it prostitution, be it gambling, someone will provide that. So there's a variety of questions that go on in the case of, you know, for example, and this is a change of subject as well, but, you know, we're talking about possibly bringing medical marijuana to Ohio. And really the best way to do that is through the equivalent of a liquor control commission, a marijuana control commission. They're now talking about bringing in a cannabinoid substance that's, you know, artificial, but grown...
Fake marijuana?
Well, it's grown, it's genetically altered, grown from natural cannabis, when we could have homegrown and say everyone could grow 12 plants a year. It's weed, for example, as just like you make your own wine. You're allowed to make so many bottles of wine or beer a year, but the liquor control, we could say who could buy it, under what circumstances, what the THC content is. I mean, it's really begging for regulation.
Yeah.
Right? Because mm-hmm. the net effect of liquor yeah. was we created organized crime.
Yeah.
You know, people were going right. to drink.
Yeah. And, I mean, the harmful effects of alcohol are apparent. You know, so it's up for debate, I think, whether alcohol is better or worse than something like marijuana.
You know? Well, I've always believed marijuana at its worst.
Yeah.
Isn't as bad as alcohol.
Yeah.
If you look at the deaths, and a lot of it depends on yeah. responsible use. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's ways to deal with this, and particularly for medical use. I mean, yeah. we really need to let people use it as medicine. AIDS wasting syndrome.
Yeah.
For
cancer.
One. Cancer.
Glaucoma.
Sure. I mean, how could you arrest anybody?
PMS cramps.
Well, it beats that vibrator thing from the 1880s.
I don't know.
Another, maybe it doesn't. Maybe they go together. Well, and maybe that was the missing Victorian, but it was legal. Marijuana was legal back during the yeah. Victorian age.
Yeah.
It doesn't
Washington,
really become.
Jefferson.
Sure, the hemp growers. Doesn't become illegal to 1937.
Reefer but, madness, right?
It's, and that was the propaganda, mm-hmm, right? Speaking yeah. of the narrative, right? They link it to, quote, Negro jazz musicians.
Good idea.
Connie, an advocate of jazz.
Yeah, I like jazz. So, all right. A big change of subject, I guess, is that we, the Free Press is showing a movie on Tuesday. It's Gasland.
And fracking in Ohio.
Fracking. So I recently saw Gasland, and Gasland will be playing for free at the Drexel Theater on Tuesday. I'm not sure the date of that. It'll be the 24th. So
May 24th at the Drexel.
Yeah, May 24th at the Drexel, 7:30.
7:30.
And it'll be a free film showing of Gasland, a movie that you can go to find out about fracking. Fracking is hydrofracking is do you want to tell about it, Bob?
Well, I mean,
what's fracking?
What you're really doing
listeners?
Is you know, you're going a mile down, you're injecting liquid often with hundreds and hundreds
right.
of chemicals
yeah.
into the ground to get the gas to release.
Right.
And again, I hardly ever give kudos to for-profit mainstream news organizations, but Channel 4 uh-huh. did an excellent job on fracking and
wow.
what it's done in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
I mean, they had this guy where he didn't own the mineral rights on his own farm.
Jeez.
You know, he was doing this farming.
he owned only the surface of his land.
Right.
He didn't own the
mineral rights had been sold.
Already?
And then
wow.
suddenly they came down there and began to frack.
Like,
and
hi.
His water's coming up now. The it looks
orange,
like iced tea.
Brown,
yeah,
right?
Right.
So, like, the movie is pretty cool. It talks a lot about the specific chemicals that they use and what the chemicals are for, you know, different agents. And a lot of them are flammable, mm-hmm. or maybe the gas that's being released also is flammable. It's natural gas that they're trying to release. And so it's it gets shot down in there with water, all the chemicals, and then it goes into the water supply, no big surprise. And so people are turning on their taps, and it's coming mm-hmm. out brown. And in the movie, there are a couple scenes where they're actually taking a lighter and lighting the tap water as it comes out of the tap, and it's like bursting into flames, basically. It's not bursting, but it's like it's on fire.
Yeah, because
so
that's going to pollute
wow.
the groundwater.
Yeah.
It's going to, you know, pollute the streams in the area.
Yeah.
And, again, a lot of people weren't really told that was going to happen.
That they're being poisoned. I mean, they're basically being poisoned. People had mysterious illnesses and headaches that they didn't know what it was from. They couldn't get it diagnosed. Then when they were finally setting their water on fire, they thought, well, oh, it's probably the water. And the companies are, of course, like trying to make them prove it and show cause and effect. And, I mean, it seems obvious that you know, that, you know, it's just, what's that, reciprociter?
The thing speaks for itself.
It's like, why do you have to prove it?
Reciprociter. The fire and coming out.
Yeah. It wasn't like that before. Yeah.
Drinking fire water.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't like that before. So the thing speaks for itself.
Gasland. Highly recommended by...
Connie Goodell Newton.
And Bob Fitrakis.
And this is Fight Back with Connie Goodell Newton and Bob Fitrakis on WCRS 98.3 102.1.
Peace.